Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinton Sports Podcast on this 8th of February 2017. As we discuss the world of sports, as always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald or go to Instagram and follow me at Bruno Gerald Quinn. As we put a bow on the NFL season, Super Bowl 51 in the books. And for the next 45 minutes or so, and we'll maybe touch on a couple of other things that are going on in the world of sports, a couple of NBA things of note to discuss as well. But we begin with, you know, we return to the scene of the crime for the Atlanta Falcons. And, you know, I'm glad I did this show on Wednesday, because I needed the full basically 36 hours to process what transpired on Sunday night. Because even with that 36 hours or so, I still can't believe what I saw February 5th. Just one of the strangest, craziest games that you will ever see. A game that, you know, I guess you have to call it a classic because of the just, you know, historic collapse by the Atlanta Falcons and in terms of what transpired in that fourth quarter. Forget about overtime, because overtime, once New England got the ball, it was a foregone conclusion what was going to happen. But in that fourth quarter, you know, you're going into the fourth quarter, New England, you know, is up, you know, Atlanta's up 28-9. And you're basically just saying to yourself, you know, I can't, I'm saying, you know, watching like a couple of buddies, Chad Quinn, of course, Rob Sapp, like, we're celebrating. Like, the coronation is about to begin. Like, we're having a ball, enjoying wings. You know, I got the Merlot in my hand. I've never smiled so much at a Patriot game during the game. I mean, I remember, you know, Giants, both times when the Giants beat them, you know, being excited about that and amped up about that. But I've never smiled so much in my life during a Patriot playoff game, during the game, as I did Sunday night with the way things were going. So, you know, 28-9. And, you know, on top of that, you know, they miss an extra point. Steven Gostkowski, one of the best kickers in the league. Nothing could go wrong. This can't go wrong. This can't go bad for Atlanta. Atlanta cannot lose this game. Patriots, you know, have a penalty on the onside kick. Atlanta starts at the Patriot 41-yard line, 9-yard completion, gain 9 yards, second and one at the Patriot 32. They end up getting nothing out of the drive. Okay. Cool. It's still 28-9. You're still in the fourth quarter. Patriots go down the field. A long drive produces a field goal. Okay, 28-12. I mean, it's, you know, 16-point lead. Atlanta, again, is still in great shape, making the Patriots use up clock to get a field goal. Again, at this point, you're just not thinking about the Patriots, about the Atlanta Falcons losing this football game. It's just not possible. There's no way they're going to lose this football game. There's no way. Then the game completely changes with the strip sack. Dante Hightower, the play that changed, in essence, changed the complexion of the game at 28-12 on a 3rd-and-1 while you're in shotgun on 31, if you want to pass the ball again, a lot of people said you could have ran it. Yes, you could have ran it. But again, I'm all for, passing the ball on a quick, I'm all for, I have nothing wrong with my MVP quarterback having the ball in his hands. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Not in the shotgun, not a five-step drop. Devontae Freeman misses a block. Dante Hightower, who had a great game, makes the play. Patriots, at that point, the Patriots were in business. Because now, 28-12, two possessions, momentum, short field. Now they could somewhat smell the dream. They could somewhat smell the dream. So 28-12, Patriots go down on the field. Next thing you know, it's 28-20. It converts to two-point conversion. Okay, if you're Atlanta, again, you're still up by a touchdown and a two-point conversion with the football. With the football, with the MVP, with the best offense in the world. Okay? You go down the field. Big play by Devontae Freeman with over a 40-yard, catch. Big play by Julio Jones, one of the great catches you'll ever see. You are first and 10 at the Patriot 23-yard line. You're first and 10 at the Patriot, 22-yard line. You get a short run for no gain. You get a short run, lose a yard, cool. It's second and 11 at the 23-yard line. 28-20, second and 11 at the 23-yard line. Then you get stupid. You drop back, throw a pass. Matt Ryan can't take that sack in a million years. He does. You lose 13 yards. Then you get a penalty. And next thing you know, it's third and 33. You're out of field goal range. So you've gone from first and 10 at the 22 with a great field goal kicker, Matt Bryant. 39 to 40-yard field goal to third out of field goal range, tired defense, and a Tom Brady who is seething to get the ball back in his hands. And that was it. Patriots go down the field, score a touchdown, convert a two-point conversion. Atlanta does nothing with the ball. Game, set, match. So what happened? How could something like this happen in a Super Bowl? It's not, it's not an AFC wild. It's not the wild card where you have Buffalo, Houston, Frank Wright. Not a wild card. San Francisco Giants, Jeff Garcia, 38-14 at one point. Yeah, 38-14. This is the Super Bowl. These are the two best teams in the world. Four plays, last 16 plays, four runs for the Atlanta Falcons. And again, I could sit up here and tell you, could sit up here and start this program out talking about how great Tom Brady is, how great Bill Belichick is, how great, never say die Patriots. These are things that we already know. There was nothing that came out of that game about the Patriots, about Tom Brady, about Bill Belichick that we did not already know. Now, there'll be people to put Brady over Montana. That's fine. There'll be people say Belichick's the greatest coach of all time. I'll still say Lombardi. But you know what? Bill at worst is number two of all time. Belichick is at worst number two. Remember, Lombardi was 9-1, five championships, one playoff loss his entire career, and never had a losing record. Had a winning record with a Redskins team that was terrible before he got there, and before he passed away, after the season, prior to his second season coaching. So remember that. Do a little research on one Vince Lombardi. There's a reason why his name is on the trophy. But put all that aside, there was nothing. This game wasn't about the Patriot legacy. The Patriot legacy has been intact for 10 years now, okay? The Patriot legacy is like this was not about the Patriot legacy in terms of how this game went. This was about a team in Atlanta that lost a game that was impossible to lose. That's what this is about. Before this game, we did a program on the Super Bowl Sunday, and we told you some of the things that had to happen for Atlanta to win, like they had to run the ball, Matt Ryan had to play well, the moment couldn't be too big. There were a number of things that we said that probably had to go right for Atlanta to win. If you look at that list, they checked them all twice and then some. Matt Ryan played great. He threw the ball, you know, 17-23, 284. Now, again, he took some bad sacks that you can't take. Took some bad sacks that you can't take. No interceptions. The fumble was not his fault. Bad play calling, missed assignment by Devontae Freeman. Okay. Check the defense. We said they had to get a pass rush. Now, they had no chance without getting a pass rush on Brady. They knocked Brady around. Five sacks. Garrett Grady would have been the MVP. Grady Jarrett, would have been, or I could make a case, was the best player on the field. 3.5 sacks himself. The defense, again, forced a turnover, knocked Brady around, shut down LeGarrette Blount, shut down the Patriot run. Check. Coaching, game plan. Excellent game plan up until the game plan. We're not playing you zone. We're not going strictly zone coverage. We're going to go man to man, and we're going to, you know, we'll take a couple penalties, and we're going to make Tom Brady throw into short windows, and we're going to knock Brady around. Check. So, the moment, a lot of teams, you know, and this is what you worry about. This is what you worry about when it comes to first-time teams in the Super Bowl. Are you there to win the game, or are you there, or are you just happy to be there? Are you there to win the Super Bowl, or are you just happy to be there? Atlanta was clearly there to win the football game. They were not happy to be there. 28-1, 21-3, 21-0, 28-3. They were there to win that game. Check. So they check off all the necessary things that they had to do, not only to compete with the Patriots, but to beat the Patriots. They checked them all. They checked all of them. All the boxes got checked until the fourth quarter. So, you know, if you're Dan Quinn, if you're Atlanta Falcon, fan, you're saying to yourself, well, where was this game lost? Not how did we lose this game, but where was this game lost? Why did Dan Quinn choose to do what he did or didn't do what he did should have done? And that was run the ball more. That was manage the football game, not waste a timeout on a Julian Edelman catch. That was clearly a catch, great catch, that everybody in the stadium knew that was a catch after the replay. So, you know, again, you can go into these games, and a lot of times we look at these big plays, we're looking at X's and O's, we're looking at matchups. A lot of these championship games are decided, especially in the NFL, on managing the game. Can you manage the moment, down and distance, your timeouts, the emotion, the momentum? And that's what separates the championship organizations from teams that go home with their tail between their legs, as in the case with the Atlanta Falcons. They went home with their tail between their legs. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk about the fallout from this Super Bowl 51. A couple other things, again, in the NFL of note, to talk about as well. That's coming up in much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast. We're trying to get the Facebook Live going. It's not very, the signal's not very strong right now for me. A lot of times it depends on the area you're in. So we're trying to get that going. We made a couple of, failed attempts to get it. It might not just be, might not just be in the cars tonight, but we'll do our best to get that going as we try to broadcast program live, Facebook Live, give you a chance to, give you a chance to see this Temple hat and, and go from there. Again, 347-215-6180 is your call number as we look back at Super Bowl 51 in the books, Patriots, championship number 5, Tom Brady, 4th MVP, 5th championship, Belichick, 5th Super Bowl champion, 5th championship as a coach, only quarterback and coach with 5 Super Bowls. Remember, Lombardi has 5 championships, 2 Super Bowls with 3 NFL championships. But again, Belichick, Brady, the only quarterback coach with 5 Super Bowls. The only other player with 5 Super Bowl wins is Charles Haley, who I believe won 3 in Dallas and 2 with San Francisco. I believe he won 3 in Dallas. Yeah, 2 and 2 in San Francisco. So Charles Haley is the only guy with 3 Super Bowls. I think, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that he won 3 straight. 94, 95. I thought you won 93 and 94 with Dallas. But maybe it was 94. Maybe it wasn't 3 straight. I don't think it was 3 straight. I think he won, I want to say 92, 93 with Dallas. I know he won multiple. He won at least 3 with Dallas. So I want to say 3 with Dallas, 2 with 3 with Dallas, and 2 with San Francisco. Or it might have been, I'll look up, what the breakdown on that was. But bottom line is he was a guy, he won, he's the only other player in NFL history to win five Super Bowls. Again, tremendous player, recently got into the Hall of Fame, was a great, great pass rusher for a long time in the NFL, had a great career. So, listen, if you're a Patriot fan, you think I'm trying to shortchange you by focusing on the Atlanta part of the game, I'm sorry, but the Atlanta aspect of this game is the more fascinating aspect in terms of how they collapsed. And in terms of their collapse, I thought the Patriots were going to play well, and nobody was going to be surprised if the Patriots won the game. I don't think anybody expected Atlanta's defense to play as well as it played, and no one in the world expected Atlanta to jump out on the Patriots 21-3, 28-3, and basically be dominating the game basically for the better part of 3 quarters. And again, you go into that 4th quarter, if you're an Atlanta fan, you just, again, that 4th quarter should have been a coordination. You should have been, you should have been popping champagne throughout that 4th quarter. You should have been able to celebrate. I mean, that 4th quarter literally, killed my buzz, watching the game. The Wings, I'm telling you, for somebody who detests the Patriots, and I hate the Patriots with a passion. I was watching the game with 2 other people who detest the Patriots. It was, we went from the sublime to the absolute insane and ridiculous. I mean, I've never been a part of a more devastating Super Bowl as far as the ultimate high versus the worst low. I cannot remember watching a game like that, to be honest with you. And again, a lot of times, you wonder why NFL coaches, the good ones, the top tier ones, are so valuable. You found out in this game in the worst way, because there's a psychological component to this game to where, you as an NFL coach, we can talk about players choking in big spots. We can talk about a field goal kicker missing a kick. Quarterback throwing a bad pass and getting an interception. Coaches choke too in big spots. I mean, again, Seattle, the Seattle connection from 2 years ago, Dan Quinn, when he was a defensive coordinator in Seattle back at, you know, in the 2014 season, you know, Pete, his boss at the time, Pete Carroll, had one of the worst, you know, calls, Super Bowl, had one of the worst play calls in the history of the sport in a big spot with that throw on second down, with the Malcolm Butler interception, the throw on second down with a timeout and two and third and fourth down waiting. Timeout and three downs to get 1 yard with Marshawn Lynch in the backfield. So coaches choke as well. I mean, there's no two ways about it. And this is worse because, again, Seattle was up, you know, only by 10 in the fourth quarter. And, you know, that was just one play. This was a series of plays. I mean, you know, you look at how unlikely that New England was in terms of winning that game. You look at the odds and percentages. There were 20 different occasions where Atlanta had a 99% chance to win that game. Think about that. 20 different occasions where Atlanta had a 99% chance to win that football game. 20. So coaches choke as well. And again, there's not, and only like, this only happens in football as far as the gap between the great coach and the great quarterback versus the great coach and best player in all other sports. The gap between that and football is smaller by far than any other gap between great player and great coach in any other sport. In any other sport, you don't even think about it. In any other team sport, you're taking the great player. In the NFL, you take the star quarterback, but it's somewhat of a the great coach is not far behind. That's how important the head. That is how important a great head, having a top head coach is in this league. Because the talent, you know, in the NFL, the talent is almost equal, just about, for the most part. The talent is basically even, 1-53. And again, you got to give New England credit. We knew that. I mean, you know they're not going to quit. But again, if New England, they know what they do. They execute and they stay the course. Execute, stay the course. Everybody's talking about these adjustments that Belichick made. Like, what did Belichick do to change the momentum, or, you know, stop this, stop that? There was no adjustments to be made. There was nothing. There was no adjustments to be made by the Patriots. The Patriots couldn't do anything with Atlanta's offense. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't stop them from running. Matt Ryan, when he had time, found receivers wide open. Not by like, I don't think Matt Ryan had to even, other than the Julio Jones pass, he made two passes to Julio Jones in tight coverage. Other than that, there were guys open by 5 and 10 yards, at least, wide open over the course of that game. Gaping holes for Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman. They averaged, you know, I think Atlanta averaged almost 6 yards a carry. So there were no adjustments to be made by the one great Bill Belichick. But again, when you play the Patriots, it's almost just important for you not to beat yourself than it is for you to beat them. It really is. Because they wait for you to make a mistake. They wait for you to slip, and as soon as you slip, they're going to be there to clean up the mess and pick up the pieces. And that's exactly what they did once Matt Ryan got stripped by Dante Hightower. They cleaned up the mess and picked up the pieces. Now, a couple moves that Atlanta made since the game, Brian Cox and Michael Smith and Richard Smith are out. Richard Smith as a defensive coordinator, Cox is out as a linebackers coach, defensive line coach. So they're going, and again, they clearly are being scapegoated by Dan Quinn, who had a press conference and basically said he didn't regret making the calls they made. It was more about the execution and the result. which if you're an Atlanta fan, you have to just, you know, be just, you have to want to kick your TV after hearing something like that. I mean, please. I mean, you're not, you know, you wouldn't go back and change those plays or rethink what the calls you made as far as not running the ball versus, so that as an Atlanta fan, you can't be happy about hearing that because, you know, that shows that you are just stubborn in terms of your conviction when your conviction is wrong. Listen, there's nothing, I'm all for being aggressive. I mean, I'm all for being aggressive. Being conservative, going the safe route, that doesn't win you championships. That doesn't win you championships. But being stupid doesn't win you championships either. And there are times when you have to put your ego aside and say how and manage the football game. How can we best manage this game? Get first downs, run the clock, shorten the game. Because again, at 21-3, 28-3, 28-9, you have the lead on your side and you have the clock on your side. The lead and the clock. And whatever you did to get that lead, you have to, you know, pass play. I mean, you have to make that adjustment to the situation at hand if you're Dan Quinn. No, we don't need an 80-yard pass play to Julio Jones. Let's get two or three first downs and run 4 or 5 minutes off the clock. I mean, again, Atlanta defense, not in a million years will I ever think that they will force two turnovers, get a pick six, and knock Brady around for 5 sacks. I couldn't fathom that. If you had told me that before the game, they're going to have 5 sacks, pick six, and force two turnovers, I would say Atlanta would have won the game by 21 points, by 24, by minimum two touchdowns. So they were one going away. Because I knew the offense was going to, we knew the offense was going to be able to move the ball against the Patriots and put up some points. Patriots hadn't faced an offense like Atlanta's all year long to that level. With that many weapons, with the kind of versatility that the Atlanta offense had. They hadn't faced an offense like that all year long. So it wasn't a case of whether or not Atlanta was going to be able to score. It was a case of could they keep Tom Brady off the field? Could they get a pass? Could they stop their run? Could they get a pass rush? They did both of them. But their offense did them no favors in the fourth quarter. I'm not even going to knock them for only scoring 7 points in the third quarter. I think at that point in the third quarter, the game settled down. It was 7-6. Listen, you had a first quarter where teams are trying to find their way, like a championship fight. You know, no real haymakers thrown. Second quarter, you have Atlanta just throw body blows and haymakers and try to knock the Patriots out. And in the fourth quarter, you had the Patriots with the final knockout. First and third quarter, it just was a regular football game. Again, one of the strangest Super Bowls that you will ever see. Again, I have to call, it has to be considered a classic based on how, you know, the collapse. But it was not a great game. There are 10 Super Bowls off the top of my head that I will say were better games. I mean, you had 3 turnovers, you had some spotty play calling. Brady couldn't hit the side of a wall in the first half. I mean, he was missing guys in the first half, second quarter, third quarter. He's missing guys left and right. And, you know, I know he had 466 yards passing, but he did also throw the ball 62 times. He only averaged, you know, what, seven and a half yards per completion. So they were not big plays. Again, if you're Atlanta, this is one that, you know, this is one that could, this is the type of loss that could set your franchise back. I mean, it's that bad. It really is that bad. And now you fight, you know, Kyle Shanahan is going to San Francisco. You bring in Steve Sarkisian, which I completely just don't understand. I mean, you bring in a guy who has never been a coordinator in the NFL, was a quarterback's coach for, you know, what, a year, 2 years, got ran out of USC because of, you know, alcohol abuse, spent basically a cup of coffee with Nick Saban. Saban can't stand him. So, I mean, why would you elevate him to a position of one of the best offenses in football, you know, with that resume? And it sounds like, you know, they were seeking him out. I mean, Dan Quinn wanted it. He was on their board. He was on their radar. So that's a peculiar move. Again, the firing of the defensive coaches, to me, I think just makes zero sense from my standpoint. To me, it's a complete reaction to what happened in the game. It would not happen if they had won that game, bottom line. Again, we know their defense wasn't good this year. That wasn't the strength of their team. Their defense, again, they're missing two of their best players, Adrian Claiborne and Trufant, who is a Pro Bowl caliber cornerback. So that has to be taken into consideration. Young defense, a lot of young talent that has to be developed. I can't put that loss on their defense. It's just not fair. I mean, their defense was gas. Patriots ran 93 plays. That's almost like a game and a half worth of plays. There's no way you're going to be able to, you know, hold the fort for over 40 minutes. And especially with all that's on the line for a Super Bowl, with the type of pressure that you're under, that level of a game. Those guys had nothing in midway through the fourth quarter. And oh, forget about it, overtime. They were, you know, the walking dead, basically. So, again, I could see Atlanta. I'll make a prediction. I don't think Atlanta will make the playoffs next year. I could see them taking a major step back next year. I can easily see them falling, probably being an 8-8 team, struggling to make the playoffs, and possibly not even making the playoffs. I have to see them psychologically recover from this loss. That's how bad it was. 347-215-6180. We will switch gears a bit, get into some NBA. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. Sports Podcast will be right back. Is your call number. One NFL thing of note, can Deion Sanders stop crying about something that occurred probably 10 or 15 years ago? I mean, 10 years ago. Who cares about stealing signals? I mean, now, is Deion Sanders now, is he on the Patriot payroll now? Yeah, I mean, my goodness. How much, who cares? Everybody in football steals signals. I mean, it happens all the time. This is nothing new. I mean, Tony Dungy came out and said it right. Listen, we did nothing illegal. Did we steal signals? Yes. But we didn't do it. It's not the same as videotaping it. I mean, how do you compare stealing signals off a sideline to videotaping signals? Or even videotaping practices. Do you really want to compare that? I mean, Patriots. I can't stand them. I just can't stand them. But man, I mean, they have 5 championships. Now we have to try to like knock other people. We have to try to clean up the Patriot card, some of the Patriot cheating by, you know, accusing other teams of doing something that everybody in the league does. In terms of stealing signals, no different than in baseball. It's still in science. Everybody does it. It happens all the time. Please. Nothing illegal about it. And again, for Deion Sanders to be an all-time great Hall of Fame player to be crying about that 10 years later, I mean, Deion, get over it. Please. You got what, 2 Super Bowl rings. Pipe down. Then try to get Lawrence Dane Thompson, who works with him on the NFL Network, or everybody knew it, LT knew it. So who cares? So what? So what they still, and listen, it's not a big deal because Tony Dungy, it's not like Tony Dungy came on. Tony Dungy could have easily said nothing, denied it. Tony Dungy was like, yeah, we did it. Okay. And your point? Is it considered cheating? No. Does everybody do it if they can get away with, not get away with it, if they are have the capabilities of doing it? Yes. Does it compare to what the Patriots did? No. But the absolute just whining about Deion Sanders, I mean, and the Patriot, you know, ass kissing, I mean, please. They're going to get their asses kissed enough for the next 100 years. They'll be talking about this game, this the Super Patriot Championships, long after I'm gone, you're going, and the next person. I mean, play. So there, and that, again, that's why I wanted to focus on the Atlanta aspect. You know, the Patriot aspect is not, it's not interesting. I mean, Patriots, yes, the whole hunt, they won again. What is new? 5 Super Bowls in 16 years, 15 years, basically. There's nothing, there's no juice to the Patriot angle of this, especially in this particular game. As far as the NBA goes, a couple things. One, I really don't rarely get into regular season basketball outside of Christmas Day. But the Wizards-Cavalier game in D.C. and Verizon a couple nights ago was, again, Monday night was one of the best regular season games that you'll ever see. High-level game, overtime, big shots, big numbers. You know, LeBron basically goes 32-17. Wall and Bill basically combined for like 63 points. Bill has 41. Wall, a bunch of assists. Love, 39-12. Tristan Thompson, 22 points and God knows how many rebounds. LeBron fouls out. Washington still can't take advantage of it, and the Cavs hold on for an overtime victory. Again, that the place. I wasn't at the game, but from what I was told, it was the place. Verizon was electric. Not a great, as you may guess, considering how bad the Wizards have been for the past 30 years or so. Not a great home court advantage, but I heard that night, watching the game on TV, that night it was a great, it was basically majority Wizards fans, and they put on a show. Both teams put on a show. Cleveland was desperately trying hard to win that game, so that has to make you feel somewhat good about the Wizards. They gave you that much respect for them to actually go out there and try to win the game rather than sitting Kyrie or sitting LeBron or sitting Kevin Love and just moving on to the next game. They actually gave the Wizards the respect that the Wizards, have earned with 17 straight home wins prior to that, and actually played the game and played hard and put on a show for the sold out crowd. One of the few sellouts that the Wizards have had this year at Verizon. But again, when you've lost for 20 or 25 years, it's hard to get people sold on your product. I mean, that's all there is to it. Wizards fans, the players can complain all they want about the home crowd, or lack thereof, or other teams coming in when they have great players, and Laker fans coming in and taking over. The team has been bad for basically 25 to 30 years. I mean, you had to build up a little bit of winning and build up. You had to build up your product, and for a quality product in order for your fan base to completely trust it. So that is what it is. But for this year, the Wizards are definitely a team that has a legit chance to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. They have veteran. They have tough guys. Bill, when he's healthy and when he plays in the playoffs, has been a big time postseason. Has been an excellent postseason player. You know what you're going to get from John Wall. Otto Porter's playing well. Markieff Morris, Gortat. So they have nice pieces. I don't know if they can get anybody in a trade. We'll see what happens. From a Cleveland perspective, I'm wouldn't be concerned about Cleveland at all, even despite all this nonsense with LeBron and Coach. Complaining about players, the Barkley thing. That stuff means nothing at this point. It's February. it's February. They're going to go through the Eastern Conference, and unless some major injuries occurs, they'll be in the NBA Finals. I mean, that's all there is to it. That's why, you know, people get into, you know, what's wrong with Cleveland, keeping up with Golden State. You don't have to keep up with Golden State in February. You just have to be ready for Golden State or Cleveland in June. So, you know, it doesn't matter if they're not playing as well as Golden State is right now. As long as they, you know, get to June and healthy and playing at a high level, they will have a shot in that series. Make no mistake about it. Don't let this January, you know, 7 to 8 months, all this nonsense that you see, don't let that fool the bottom line. And that's the bottom line is they had the best player in the world. And even against Golden State, they'll have the best player and the best closer in Kyrie Irving. And a Kevin Love, who doesn't even look like the same player with Cleveland this year, last year versus this year. I mean, he looks like the Kevin Love that was with Minnesota and was, you know, putting up those gaudy numbers all those years, while, you know, in almost basketball purgatory in Minnesota. But he's played great. I would not be concerned about Cleveland at all. I don't understand what Phil Jackson's trying to accomplish with Carmelo Anthony. At this point, I don't see what purpose is it serving. It's clear that he wants Anthony out. Anthony does not have a lot of trade value at his age and with his contract. But I have a feeling that this thing is probably going to happen. I didn't think it was going to happen until summertime, but it's just gotten to a point to where I think both sides are completely done with each other. Phil's done with Carmelo. Carmelo's done with Phil. I think that the Knicks will be able to get an average haul for Anthony. Maybe they get probably a first-round pick, rotation player, bench player, and that's it. They're not getting anything significant for Carmelo Anthony. Nothing significant. They will not get an all-star back or anything close to it. So if you're a Knicks, it's time to move on. If you're Phil Jackson, it's time to shut up and just try to trade. Try to do what you need to do to trade to get rid of Anthony. I mean, these subtweets, this subliminal philosophical BS that he's you know, posting, it means nothing. If you're Carmelo, at a certain point, if I was Carmelo, I wouldn't even respond to take any questions on it. I just totally dismiss it at a certain point. At this point, because it's just, you know, forget about immature. It's just purpose in your Phil Jackson. It serves no purpose to go after Carmelo Anthony. I mean, it really doesn't. Especially if you're trying to trade him. You know, that's the thing about Phil. Phil has a couple. You know, he has a couple of things ass backwards when it comes to running his organization, like taking shots at other team star players. Like, eventually you want a free agent. So why would you take a shot at anybody, whether it's LeBron James or any other players in the league, that you're going to have some cap money in the offseason, and considering that you are trying to draw a big-time free agent to come play with Porzingis. So this actually makes zero sense. You're going to constantly be ripping Anthony, but again, I expect that move to be made before the trade deadline on February 23rd. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. I will see you next time. Enjoy the rest of your evening.